The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Welcome to the Blonde Files podcast. I'm your host, Ariel Lori, and I'm here to talk all things wellness, from how to achieve optimal health and well-being to the best beauty tips and everything in between. No topic is off limits. I know there's so much information out there, so I'm bringing on expert guests and sharing my own experiences to help you sift through all the wellness stuff without the BS. Enjoy the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm excited because I have one of my favorite people and favorite doctors on the show today. She was on a few years ago, but today's episode, we really get into a lot of hot topics in the wellness world right now. So I am talking to my friend, Dr. Danielle Bilardo. I'm sure a lot of you follow her on Instagram. She is a preventative cardiologist in Los Angeles who helps patients across the United States and internationally to optimize their weight and cardiovascular health through her practice, Precision Preventative Cardiology. She is super smart. She's a graduate of the Drexel University College of Medicine. She completed her residency at Temple University, and she uses her unique evidence-based approach to partner with her patients, blending the latest cutting-edge medical care with comprehensive lifestyle changes, emphasizing nutrition, exercise, and stress management to help her patients achieve optimal health. She's very into wellness, but she's very into evidence-based wellness, and she is fighting the good fight when it comes to a lot of the wellness and nutrition fads and trends and everything that are out there. So in this episode, we are talking a lot about that. We are discussing, of course, why cardiovascular health is so critical to total health, being that that is her specialty. But we also get into debunking wellness myths and trends. We talk what treatments she would never recommend, the dangers of a lot of supplements that are out there. We talk about preventing cardiovascular disease and dementia. We talk a lot about GLP-1 weight loss medications, such as Ozempic. We talk about medical gaslighting, and you know, it's refreshing to hear somebody in the medical community who recognizes a lot of the problems with healthcare today. We talk about the most dangerous diets for heart health, the best foods for heart health, the importance of evidence-based research, and so much more. She is a blast. She is super smart, but she's also just like a total girl's girl, and I have so much fun with her. And I know you guys will love her too. So please enjoy Dr. Danielle Bilardo. Okay, welcome, Danielle.
Hi.
Hi.
So happy to be back.
So excited to have you here. I first had you, I think, in 2020, right?
No, it feels like
forever.
It was
like beginning of COVID.
Right? That was when it was Zoom life.
Yes, yeah. Zoom life. So happy to have you here in person.
So excited.
I feel like we're internet friends, and I always love meeting people that I like have had Instagram friendships with. I think that your voice is so important with what you do, both, you know, when it comes to cardiovascular health, obviously, which you're so passionate about, but also in like the nutrition and wellness space. And I really want to delve into a lot of these kind of wellness factor fiction topics that, you know, you talk a lot about, because something that I really admire and appreciate about you is that you don't have a bias. We all have inherent biases,
we
right?
Do,
but
yeah.
You really work to keep yours in check. We're going to get into all of that, but why don't we start by just having you tell everybody a little bit about what it is that you do.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be back. And for everyone listening, just in case you thought Ariel's glass skin wasn't real, it was just on the internet. No, I am here in person to tell you it's as perfection.
Post-Vegas, we're a little crackly grass, but thank you.
No, that's amazing. My name is Dale Blardo. I'm a cardiologist and I am here in Los Angeles, and I do a lot of preventive cardiology, cardiometabolic health, weight loss is a huge part of my practice. And I see patients all over the country through telemedicine as well. But yeah, big focus of mine is cardiovascular disease prevention, weight loss, women's health. I'm involved on the academic side with regards to our guidelines that we put together for some nutrition and cardiovascular disease. I was lucky to be one of the authors, the lead author actually of our latest nutrition clinical practice statement for nutrition and cardiovascular disease. So yeah, I guess I have a little bit of both the private practice side and then some of the nerdy research side.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the most common issues that you see in your private practice?
Yeah, so in cardiology, I think that we see, of course, across the board, I think people always forget cardiovascular disease doesn't get the exact same press it should.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about the number one through 10 cause of death, you know, in reality, if you really broke it down, it's cardiovascular disease for both men and women. It's mm-hmm. the most common cause of death. And because it happens later in life and because it's believed to be this slower process, I think that people that are our age don't really worry about it and think about it as much. And so I see patients across the spectrum. I always say it's never too early to see a cardiologist because we're lucky in cardiology. It's like the one specialty where we have pretty much narrowed down exactly how to prevent cardiovascular disease. And luckily, the same things that prevent cardiovascular disease are the same things that prevent dementia, you know, of course, stroke, and things that really ruin not only quantity of life, but also quality of life, which at the end of the day is the most important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think I see a variety of patients for preventive cardiology, patients looking to prevent cardiovascular disease, of course, patients who already have cardiovascular disease. And then a lot of patients I see for weight loss, weight management, because in the advent of, I'm sure we'll chat about it, these new medications, in reality, every single cardiovascular disease risk factor improves with these GLP-1 medications. And so it's become a huge part of my practice. And I'm actually a huge advocate for what I would call appropriate use of the medications, because with the advent of anything that works, there's going to be, of course, a huge arm of people using them inappropriately and dangerously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like with cardiovascular health, at least when you're our age or 20s, 30s, yeah. even 40s, you think that that's something that you'll deal with
invincible,
later.
Right?
But you yeah. mentioned dementia, and I feel like I've been reading a lot of articles lately. I don't know how accurate they are, but they say like dementia starts 10 years before you are symptomatic. Is that accurate? And is that similar to, you know, cardiovascular issues as well?
Yeah. So back in the day, we used to think dementia was really more likely to be genetic. And they had all these theories about beta amyloid plaque and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're actually finding, you know, we think of our body as like our organ systems as these closed systems. Like you have to have this one diet for heart disease, this one diet for cancer prevention, this one diet for Alzheimer's prevention. But in reality, it's our blood is flowing, the same blood that's, you know, flowing through our heart is flowing through the rest of our body and all of the vessels in our body. So now the vast majority of dementia, vast majority, is caused by the same underlying mechanism that causes cardiovascular disease, coronary disease, with the plaque deposition in our coronary arteries. And even though it seems so far off, truthfully, no one develops cardiovascular disease overnight. Mm-hmm. No one develops dementia overnight. And so prevention really does start. We advocate for prevention as early as what we call primordial prevention in kids. The thing is about cardiology, why it's so great is because we really do have the formula down with regards to how to prevent. So even if you have a significant family history, even if every single person in your family's had heart disease, even if you're the youngest person in your family, you know, say if someone has a parent that had a heart attack at 40, because of the advent of new medications in cardiovascular disease prevention and in what we know about the nutrition and lifestyle changes we can make, it's really preventable, you know, and it's pretty much the most important thing is getting in early
mm-hmm.
and getting seen by someone that is, you know, evidence-based and going to help you with prevention, but it's never too early to do it. And I think the good news is that we have a lot we can do with the information, because unfortunately, you know, I look at my colleagues who are in things like rheumatology and oncology,
mm-hmm.
super challenging because you could do all the treatments, all the things, and, you know, a patient could still be suffering with the disease. But in cardiology, we're really lucky that at least for cardiovascular disease in terms of coronary artery disease, heart attack, stroke, things like that, we can really prevent the vast majority of it now.
Mm-hmm. What numbers should people be looking for? Because I know like ApoB is very popular right now. I actually had a panel done where they tested certain cardiovascular factors and I have really high lipoprotein A. Which,
wow.
But I have no family history of heart disease.
Okay.
But I was told that's not good.
Yeah.
So what numbers, you know, if we are kind of looking at preventative lifestyle things that we can do? What should we be looking at?
So great question. So everyone should know their numbers. So first thing to know would be your blood pressure, because high blood pressure is a silent killer, and you can be thin, active, and still have hypertension. And so I think everyone, no matter what age, especially when you're starting to focus on prevention, should have a home blood pressure cuff. You want to get an upper arm blood pressure cuff because the ones on the wrist are not as accurate. So you want an upper arm blood pressure cuff and check your blood pressure a couple times a day. You don't need to do it all the time if you have normal blood pressure, but just to get an idea and sense of what your blood pressure is, we recommend checking in the morning and at night. It's also helpful for people who get nervous when they go to the doctor, because sometimes people go to the doctor and they go and their blood pressure is really high. And the gold standard for us to say, well, does someone actually have high blood pressure, is home blood pressure logs, where they check it twice a day with their home blood pressure cuff so they can sort out if they really have what's called white coat hypertension versus true hypertension. So knowing your blood pressure is important. And the numbers to know are anything above 120 on the top number and anything above 80 on the bottom. You don't need to have both. Just one or the other is considered elevated blood pressure and needs to be addressed further. The other numbers to know are hemoglobin A1C, which is your diabetes test that tells us how your blood sugar is controlled, because that's a cardiovascular risk factor, as well as your cholesterol. Not everyone needs an ApoB, actually, and I'm a very lipid-focused cardiologist. ApoB is really only relevant for people who have what's called discordant, if they have metabolic dyslipidemia, so essentially they have really high triglycerides, and ApoB can be useful. But generally, in the vast majority of your listeners, a regular lipid panel is helpful. And the old idea that you want a high HDL is now completely outdated. So HDL is not the healthy cholesterol anymore. Actually, HDL is a bit of an enigma. What it really is we don't have the assays to really figure out HDL's functionality, because we'd really be looking at what's called HDL efflux capacity. But now that's not as pertinent. For us, what we're looking at is what's called your non-HDL cholesterol. And for the vast majority of people, that's really just your LDL-C, the LDL cholesterol. And so ideally, we want that number as low as possible. The number that is okay for you will depend on a variety of factors, because if someone has numerous risk factors, we'll want their LDL to be lower than if someone doesn't. A number for what's called primary prevention, people without heart disease, that we aim for is an LDL at least below 100, but lower is better. And then a great thing you just mentioned is lipoprotein A. So so lipoprotein A is what's called an atherogenic lipoprotein. This is a lipoprotein that is genetically inherited. It does not mean that you're going to develop cardiovascular disease, but it does mean that you're at a higher risk. So you'd want to keep your LDL cholesterol lower, and you want to keep those risk factors, things like hypertension, diabetes, like really under control. Certain people with an elevated lipoprotein A will require lipid lowering therapy depending on how high their LDL is and their other risk factors. But lipoprotein A doesn't need to be checked all the time. It's a one-time test. That's what the guideline recommendation is now. You check it once to see if someone has that genetic risk factor, and then that can help tailor their treatment, whether or not they need a medication or not.
Got it.
Yeah.
I remember I told somebody, another guest that I had on, and she was like, oh my God. Like, she panicked. So that's good to know, because all of my other, everything else was super, super low.
Yeah. So if you have a high lipoprotein A, so essentially the last guideline statement on lipoprotein A was done by the European Society of Cardiology. They have a pretty comprehensive paper on it. And essentially, depending on how old you are and various other risk factors, depends on how much targeted therapy someone will need. And this is evolving too for lipoprotein A, because we're expecting the outcome data for lipoprotein specific medications will be out in 2025, 2026. So in 2 years, we could be having an entirely different conversation about putting you on a lipoprotein. It's called a single nucleotide polymorphism medication. But as of now, the mainstay treatment for lipoprotein A for someone who does have various other reasons, and we'll, after, you know, the podcast, I'll go through your labs and we'll make sure we don't need anything. Okay. The mainstay treatment is just lowering their ApoB, their LDL as much as possible. For some patients, that's literally just eating a lot of fiber, lowering some saturated fat content, and that enough is alone. But for others, it may require a statin. But this is kind of like an evolving, moving target.
Yeah, I feel like I heard you debating with Dr. Gundry this topic and niacin, right?
Yeah. So he's, sometimes we say you can tell how outdated a cardiologist is if they still recommend niacin for a high lipoprotein A. And he's not a cardiologist, he's a cardiac surgeon. But yes, in our debate, we had a discussion about that. That was funny.
Well, let's get into some of this. So yeah. I know that he kind of became famous about his claims about lectins, right? Something that you're very open about is that you're vegan, but that you do it for ethical reasons and that you don't recommend other people be vegan. And I think that that's so refreshing, kind of back to what I was saying in the beginning, because I think that people and practitioners alike get so dogmatic these issues. And, you know, you were kind of saying like everybody has the same claims for whatever their diet is. So whether it's vegan, whether it's carnivore, whether it's no lectin, keto. The claims are all the same. So, you know, and you even said like anecdotal evidence and anecdotes can be very moving.
Right.
And people have these stories of, you know, healing and whatnot. But you really stick to the evidence-based data. So can you talk about why that's so important?
Yeah, well, because so I am vegan. And of course, you can be incredibly healthy on a well-planned vegan diet. But on a not very well-planned vegan diet, you could be quite unhealthy. And so that's kind of the same with every single one of these dietary patterns. So you could be a incredibly healthy vegan who eats, you know, has a well-planned diet. And I say well-planned because, you know, you have to make sure you're getting adequate amount of protein and you're supplementing B12, things like that. So it takes some planning, some other micronutrients, vitamins, minerals. But with regards to just eating only plants doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be perfectly healthy. Same with a keto diet. You know, people would think that because I'm vegan, I would be like anti-keto. It's not the case at all. You can be totally healthy on a low-carb diet if it's a plant-predominant Mediterranean-style low-carb diet that focuses on tons of polyunsaturated fat, fatty fish, nuts, olive oil, avocado, things like that that's high in fiber, can be totally healthy. And I think that why this isn't as popular is that essentially our nutrition recommendations from our last clinical practice statement essentially just recommends things that people have been saying for years that I think is not sexy. It's kind of boring. And what it is eating a variety of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes. If you eat animal protein, fatty fish is great, lean protein, things like that. And the truth is, you know, I would think that that would be actually an exciting thing people could hear because you can actually tailor that to a variety of diets. You don't like whole grains and you avoid gluten, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You can find a way within that dietary pattern that avoids that. You don't want to be vegan, that's totally fine. You can find a Mediterranean style pattern that's also really healthy. Do you like high carb? Do you like low carb? You can modify any diet to be really cardiovascularly beneficial. And it doesn't have to follow one specific sort of paradigm, except for this general consensus of dietary pattern, which is just limiting, of course, sugar sweetened beverages, obviously limiting alcohol. No amount of alcohol is healthy. So no amount of alcohol is beneficial. So limiting it as much as possible, eliminating it if it is possible, and decreasing sodium intake and refined hyperpalatable processed foods as much as possible. But, you know, in reality, there's no one perfect diet. No one food in one dose is going to cause disease. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is just, you know, sadly, the idea that there's numerous dietary patterns that are healthy, you know, doesn't sell books and doesn't become a popular, you know, trope that people can sell in social media. But it is the science. It is the truth. You could actually just look at, you know, the variety of dietary trials we have. There's people on various different macronutrient profiles that do great across the board, but the similar consistency is that same principle that is actually not only just in the cardiology guidelines, but also the cancer prevention guidelines and also the endocrine society guidelines. So it really is synergy across the board for chronic disease prevention.
Since I moved into a new home, I made a vow from day one that I was not going to load it with toxic chemicals, fragrance, hormone disruptors, and all of these ingredients that can be found in so many cleaning products for our homes. Something that happened to me in my last home was that a lot of these products were being used and I was constantly getting rashes and all kinds of kind of allergic reactions. So In my new home, I am using Branch Basics. It is non-toxic, hypoallergenic, free of fragrance, free of hormone disruptors, free of harmful preservatives. It's baby and kid and pet safe, and most importantly, clean and cost effective. So their premium starter kit will provide you with everything you need to replace all of your toxic cleaning products in your home. And they have a refill model. So once you run out, the only thing you need to repurchase is the concentrate and the oxygen boost. So if you suffer from eczema, allergies, asthma, you might want to take a look at the products that you are using in your home. I had all of those issues at my old home and I don't have them now. So make the switch to Branch Basics. You can save 15% on your starter kit or their new hand soap when you use the code TheBlondeFiles at www.branchbasics.com. Again, the code is TheBlondeFiles for 15% off when you purchase a starter kit or their new gel hand soap at branchbasics.com. By now, I probably don't have to tell you guys how much focusing on protein in my diet changed my life, from weight management to better metabolism to hormone regulation and bone health. The benefits of a high protein diet are abundant, but most of us aren't getting enough protein in our diet. So enter Chomps. These meat sticks literally changed my life because I used to be pretty good getting protein in at my meals, but the wheels would fall off when I was snacking because I would either get so hungry and I would just reach for whatever was nearest, whether that was chips or a smoothie, which nothing wrong with those things. But when it comes to blood sugar stabilization and satiation, those things are not always the most helpful. Or I would reach for a bar that was really high in sugar and then I would just kind of get a crash. So with Chomps, you are getting a snack that has zero sugar, up to 12 grams of protein, and chompable flavors. My favorite is the turkey. It is so good. Chomps are simply made with natural ingredients that you can feel good about. They're filled with the highest quality, sustainably sourced 100% grass-fed meat, so you can feel good about what you are snacking on. So they come in 9 delicious, bold flavors, so there is a healthy snack option for everyone, or you can grab a variety pack to satisfy your whole family's taste buds. So right now, Chomps is offering my listeners 20% off your first order and free shipping when you go to chomps.com/blonde. Go to chomps.com/blonde to see all the delicious flavors and get 20% off your first order and free shipping. That's chomps.com/blonde. Don't forget to use my link so they know I sent you.
So do you think the bottom line is that people are just trying to gain virality on social media and sell something?
Yeah, I think it's tricky because I think that I'm sure that especially once people, you know, they practice a certain way and they see patients doing really well, you know, I'm sure that there's a part of them that believes it. And that's great. But I'm a true believer in that anecdotes are the lowest form of evidence. And, you know, in reality, something that works for one person may not work for someone else. There's a huge amount of selection bias for what comes into your practice in the first place. You know, you could be on a diet that I would consider incredibly unhealthy. The only one I would say that is likely dangerous, something like a carnivore diet, because that eliminates all fruits and vegetables, puts you at a high risk for cardiovascular disease, dementia, and colorectal cancer. And that diet, even in that diet group, you will actually find there's people who have real true improvements on the diet. And it's because it's essentially a really strict elimination diet.
Yeah.
And so there could have been other foods that were bothering them. Does that mean it's a healthy diet for them long-term? Of course not, because you have to look at various levels of evidence and to see all the different dietary patterns that, you know, over time. But I think that, of course, there is something to, you know, if everyone was out there saying, oh, just follow our, you know, guideline recommendations, evidence-based recommendations, you wouldn't have 10 different, or what am I talking about? 1 billion different books for 1 billion different diets to advertise for, you know, one thing. But in general, you know, it's tricky and it's hardest for the consumer because everyone's just trying to sort it out.
Yeah. Yeah, that was going to be my next question. You know, if somebody is just trying to do the best that they can with their lifestyle, whether it's with their diet or their exercise or supplements is another thing that I really want to talk to you about. And they're not going to sit there and get on PubMed and read the articles, what I like to do.
No, I know, I know.
I always joke that I'm like a Google scholar, like a University of Google scholar.
That's amazing.
If I ever have anything, I'm like sitting there on PubMed.
I love it.
But, you know, ultimately for me, like, I feel like I know my body.
Right.
And so that's kind of like, at the end of the day, that's what I listen to. How do you recommend the consumer, though, or somebody listening to this podcast, right, who people get conflicting information from guests on my podcast, too? And I
Absolutely.
Always say, like, the people that are here are sharing their opinions for the most part.
Right, right, right.
So take what you can apply and what feels good and leave the rest. But what do you recommend for people when it comes to that?
No, and it's so hard. And it's also so unfair in this day and age to put that on the consumer. I do feel bad when I say this because it is really hard. I mean, and I feel this as a physician because there are things with skincare and beauty that I could like easily get duped into because I'm not a dermatologist.
Yeah.
And so I'll send something, like I'll see some like crazy laser thing and I'll send it to like all my friends who are derms and be like, is this actually, mm-hmm, you know, totally going to give you a new face? And my friends are like, mm-hmm, no. And so,
M-face,
you know,
damn it.
And it's just like, but I'm easily duped. And I'm a physician who literally a huge part of my practice is evidence-based medicine. Like I know how to understand what is good data, what is the difference between a systematic review and a prospective cohort and how to synthesize various levels of evidence and what is accurate methodology. I know how to do that. And I still, even if it's outside of my specialty, I find it challenging, mm-hmm, even for dental stuff. I mean, the other day I bought a $500 toothbrush, that new Oral-B one. And I literally was asking my Instagram followers, I was like, can someone just validate that this was not a total ridiculous
$500?
Purchase? Is it
what
insane?
Does it do?
I'm so embarrassed to admit that. I do think a lot of dentists, and this is the thing, is that I have no idea if that's really good or not, but my Sonicare broke. So I got the new Oral-B one that's like, it has an app and it tells you where you missed. The one thing one dentist said to me that was really good about it was that it tells you if you're brushing too hard, which I didn't realize I was brushing too hard and can cause gum recession. Mm. So who knew? But
that
is like an insane purchase. I was so embarrassed to admit it, but I could be easily as duped. So what's my recommendation for the listeners is that in general, I agree with you. Number one, first and foremost, listen to your body. I think, mm-hmm, that is most important. And also find a healthcare practitioner that you feel validated and heard by, someone that's not going to gaslight you, because so often patients feel like their symptoms are real. And even, mm-hmm, if they get all this testing done and it shows up negative, they're still experiencing, that's their lived experience. Mm-hmm. And doctors have to be comfortable just saying, I don't know what's going, mm-hmm, on. Like, I'm on this path with you to figure it out, but I don't know. And, mm-hmm, so when we talk about things in my practice, you know, especially when it comes to weight loss, for example, GLP-1s are a great example. And patients have tons of really good questions about them. Like, do I have to be on this medication forever? Or is it going to cause X, Y, or Z? I always present with things with, you are an individual patient. Here's what the data shows. And then your experience may be similar and represented from the randomized controlled trials. Your experience may be different, but here's the information we have to date. And then you make a risk-benefit ratio decision based on that. And so the tough thing for patients, you know, the other population of patients I see getting super taken advantage of, and you and I are going to be there one day, is women in menopause. Mm. There's so many gimmicks for women in menopause and so many things that are just so inaccurate. And every year that I'm like my 30s are passing, I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, that's going to be us in, you know, 15 years. And you, mm-hmm, think of how easy it is for women to kind of get taken advantage of. And so one thing that I think is a good just basic rule of thumb is when we create a guideline, when we create a consensus for a scientific statement and things like that, we evaluate all the levels of evidence. So you're looking at randomized controlled trials, you're looking at prospective cohorts, you're looking at short-term studies, long-term studies, preclinical studies, and then synthesizing that to give the best available evidence to date. And so you can always fall back on saying, okay, so if you're a patient who wants to know, well, what's the latest treatment? What's a good treatment for menopause? You can go to the North American Menopause Society, for example. You can literally just go on their website, read their guidelines. And if you're a woman that's already kind of in that space, those words and terms will be familiar to you. Same with hypertension. We have that with all of our cardiovascular disease guidelines. Same with gastroenterology for things like IBS. You can go to the American College of Gastroenterology. And you can see, and so it doesn't mean that, you know, you are going to fall exactly into it because you are an individual and, you know, you may have benefits from something that isn't in the guidelines and that's fine. But at the same time, the reason to do something, the reason to try something shouldn't be, well, because my friend tried it and it worked, mm-hmm, because those things don't have any evidence behind them and they can just as easily be harmful. Mm-hmm. And so I think just starting there, just to give yourself an idea of, well, what does the evidence show? Starting with the things that the evidence shows are helpful or beneficial, and then moving from there to, okay, well, this hasn't worked, so let me try something else.
Mm-hmm. I think where a lot of people get stuck is that they don't trust the healthcare system in our country. And they feel either like they have been left behind or, you know, a lot of people say like, we don't have a healthcare system. We have a sick care system.
Totally.
And so I think the trust has been a little bit severed for a lot of people.
Absolutely. And it's deserved. Like it's a deserved severed trust. Mm-hmm. There's been tons of things in the healthcare industry and in pharmaceuticals, which has made people feel completely, you know, just not trustworthy at all of this healthcare industrial complex. The thing I like to remind people too is that when it comes to pharmaceutical companies and things like that, you know, I quote unquote grew up in the what's called the post-Sunshine Act era, meaning I went to start a medical school in 2010. By the time we started medical school, the Sunshine Act came out, which means that, you know, there is 100% transparency for any money anyone takes from pharmaceutical companies. So you can actually Google CMS Sunshine Act and you can, your listeners can go on and they can look me up right now and see my name and see that I've taken no money from pharmaceutical companies.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that you can't do that with supplements, right? So there's people selling supplements or continuous glucose monitors or shilling all this other stuff that makes billions of dollars in a multi-billion dollar supplement company and multi-billion dollar supplement industry, Athletic Greens, et cetera. And there's actually no equivalent of that transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone has bias. Everyone has inherent bias and everyone's biased in general. But at least with pharma now and physicians, there is that checks and balance. It is a legal law. Like it is very strict.
Mm-hmm.
So you will know how much money your doctor has taken from X, Y, or Z pharmaceutical company. And our guidelines are not influenced by pharma actually at all. There's actually a lot of really strict rules that go into who can chair guidelines. You could have no conflicts of interest. How much percentage of the guideline committee could have ever been involved with pharmaceutical companies. So I could see where the distrust comes from over time, but it really has shifted. And unfortunately, people think of, you know, a lot of the natural stuff as safe, but in reality, it's just unregulated, untested, and there's no transparency in that entire world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like there's a little bit of like cognitive dissonance maybe when it comes to that.
Yeah.
But I also see like where people would gravitate towards that after
100%.
Feeling like there's something nefarious going on with like big pharma 100%. And things like that.
And
it's
also
tricky,
patients feeling like they're not heard, like patients who feel like they go to the doc, they've gone to like five different doctors who've gaslighted them for their symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And that is nothing I can make an excuse for. And that is something really frustrating. It's one of the reasons why as a woman, I wanted to become a cardiologist because there's plenty of amazing male cardiologists out there. This is not to at all say anything negative about men who are in cardiology, but you know, 85% of cardiologists are men.
Mm-hmm.
50% of our patients are women. And a lot of women, you know, have felt like someone has said to them, oh, my symptoms are just anxiety, when in reality they had SVT or an arrhythmia or something else. And so, you know, I cannot make any excuse for the way that healthcare, really our healthcare system is broken in many, many ways. And so patients 100% have every right to feel that distrust. And I think that it's just keeping in mind that finding an evidence-based healthcare provider and then one that is compassionate and really will listen to you doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. You can find both. It just may take a little trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
And never feel bad about getting a second opinion and never feel bad about trying to see another doctor. You are your best advocate. And like you said, you know your body best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always like to have my nails done, but I do not love going to the salon every few weeks and sitting there for hours. But I have never wanted to do my own nails until I started using Olive and June's Manny system. So this is amazing. It's everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. They have salon grade tools that are designed just to use yourself, and you can customize it with your choice of six polishes. I'm sure you guys are familiar with Olive and June's polish. It is amazing. They have the most beautiful colors and the polish does not chip. It lasts 7 days or more. And when you are doing it yourself with the Olive and June Manny system, it breaks down to just $2 a manicure. So if you're thinking that you could never do your own nails, that is how I felt too. And I was actually shocked at how easy it was when I got the system. Also, they have this cuticle serum that I use daily, and it has been a total game changer because usually I can let my nails grow for like a month or so, but my cuticles get pretty unruly. That has not happened with the cuticle serum. It just keeps everything so neat. And it's also amazing for traveling. There's nothing worse than when I get my nails done and then I go on a trip and something chips. That happens a lot with my pedicure as well. They also have a pedi system. So this is great to have on hand in case you missed your appointment, you have travel coming up, or you just want to stop wasting hours of your life sitting in the nail salon. I also love Olive & June's quick dry polish. It dries in about a minute. It lasts for over 5 days. You get full coverage in 1 to 2 coats, and it's offered in 15 cruelty-free and vegan polishes. So if you just want to do your nails quickly because you have something coming up, then that is perfect for you. So visit oliveandjune.com/blonde for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/blonde for 20% off your first mani system. Again, oliveandjune.com/blonde for 20% off. Let's face it, life can be stressful. It can be overwhelming. And when you are stressed, it's not just your mind that suffers. I'm sure everybody has an experience where they were stressed and it made a mess of your digestion and immune system too. But here is the thing. Your life doesn't have to be a constant downpour. Introducing Just Calm, the breakthrough new stress soothing formula from Just Thrive. You can say goodbye to frazzled nerves and hello to a steady, serene, more relaxed you. So it's pretty amazing. Just Calm has a proprietary mood lifting blend that's clinically proven to help you relax and breathe a little easier in as little as 4 weeks. And if you want next level mood TLC, combine it with Just Thrive probiotic. So this is a spore probiotic that banishes bloat and constipation, so your gut can produce more serotonin, which is your happy hormone. Plus it supports better sleep so you can wake up feeling refreshed and revitalized. So with Just Calm and Just Thrive probiotic, you basically have the ultimate stress fighting duo to help you win the day every day. So right now, when you go to justthrivehealth.com and use the promo code BLONDE20, you can get 20% off a 90-day bottle of Just Thrive probiotic and Just Calm. So that's like getting a month for free. Also, a portion of every purchase goes to Vitamin Angels. It's a nonprofit organization that saves the lives of millions of children and moms to be around the world by ensuring they get the vitamins and minerals they need to stay healthy and strong. And I highly recommend going back to my episode that I did with Tina Anderson. I've done a few, but we did one last spring where she really got into the science behind Just Calm and Just Thrive probiotic. These have been heavily studied and it's really fascinating. So just search Tina Anderson, go to the episode from last spring, check that out, and you can take control today with Just Thrive.
I'm like fresh off this experience that I had this fall, which I haven't really talked about on here. Like I've alluded to it a little bit, but I told you about it.
Yeah.
And it was very frustrating. You know, I did feel like I went to doctor after doctor after doctor to ending up at a psychiatrist because I was like, maybe I am crazy, you know?
Right, right.
And I was in the literature and trying to find out, and there was no data to support what had happened to me. And
but you're experiencing it.
Yes.
Right.
And it was frustrating, but it didn't make me like lose faith in the medical system per se.
But it's understandable why people do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that I was just kind of like, well, this is a very like freak thing, it seems like.
Right.
And there are people like yourself and other people who I have talked to along the way who like really did kind of advocate and be like, we got to figure this out.
Totally.
But I can see for sure how
absolutely
other people have that experience and they just throw their hands up. And you know, I had the resources to keep like pursuing. Some people don't. So I get how it can be very frustrating. Let's talk about the GLP-1s a little bit because it's such a hot topic.
Such a hot topic. It's my favorite.
You know, everybody in LA is doing it.
Right.
For better or worse. So give us the data.
Okay. So GLP-1s, this is one of my favorite topics because I'm a huge advocate for GLP-1. So for your listeners who like, what is GLP-1? It's the name for the class of medications that falls under Ozempic, Wegovy, which are the same medication, or tirzepatide, which is Mounjaro or Zepbound. These medications are incredible. I use them in my practice every single day. They are phenomenal and life-changing. But with any phenomenal and life-changing medication, as always, there's going to be people are going to jump on the bandwagon and there's going to be unsafe use of these medications. Mm-hmm. So why are these medications amazing? A variety of reasons. So weight management is incredibly challenging. And, you know, for years and years and years, we've talked to patients with overweight or obesity and said, just work out more, exercise more, and eat less. It's that simple. And in reality, every single dietary trial has always shown that people always regress to the mean. They always try to lose weight and then they can lose it and then they regain. It's incredibly challenging. But with the advent of GLP-1 medications, which were initially found to be for diabetes, and then they found that they were safe and effective to be used without individuals without diabetes, these medications change your appetite in a different way. They actually change your appetite by essentially the less interesting way is that they slow what's called gastric emptying in your GI tract and make people feel fuller, faster, and for longer. But the more interesting way that they work is they actually help to regulate the hormones that have to do with hunger and satiety in the hypothalamus of the brain. You know, the way my patients who've struggled with their weight for, you know, I have some of my patients who've struggled with their weight for 40, 50 years. And it's not until they've been on a GLP-1 that they've said, you know, for the first time in my life, I've lost weight. And I don't feel like, you know, before they said they felt like they're gripping the steering wheel, holding so hard to try to not regain that weight back. And they said, for the first time in my life, I feel like I can let go and I'm just living my life. And the mental health benefits I've seen on that end is incredible. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the medications are phenomenal. And as a cardiologist, why do I love them? It's because weight loss medications of the past, we absolutely hate in cardiology. Like phentermine's a stimulant, can't stand it. Mm-hmm. And of course, the weight loss medications even before that were terrible. These medications actually have proven in every single trial to reduce every risk factor for cardiovascular disease, without a doubt. So they helped improve blood glucose. They helped improve blood pressure. They helped to improve lipids. The medication itself is not improving your blood pressure. The medication itself is not improving your cholesterol. This is where people don't understand. People get this confused. It's that the medication is allowing people to eat a healthier diet. If you eat McDonald's every day and go on a GLP-1, your lipids will still be insane. So it's actually that with the diet change that the medications help patients to accomplish, they're able to eat a healthier diet, a more high fiber, plant predominant, you know, Mediterranean style diet, and improve all of those biomarkers. And actually, just in November, published what's called the SELECT trial, which showed that these medications actually reduce risk of heart attack and stroke by 20% in individuals who have coronary artery disease.
Wow.
So really phenomenal. I mean, it's just unbelievable. With as much as these medications are amazing and incredible, and I love them, and I use them with patients every single day, and not all my patients, but in quite a lot of them. Of course, there's the industry that's going to take advantage of it. And you're going to see a lot of headlines, which we see. This person had an intestinal obstruction. This person had all of these horrible cases. And when I look into these cases, in almost every single case I've looked into, it is because this poor patient, which I feel terrible for, these individuals, were getting the medication from a non-evidence-based provider who was not following the FDA dosing protocol, who was using compounded medications. The compounded medications are so incredibly dangerous. The American Medical Association, Obesity Society, all of our major medical organizations have come out publicly saying, do not take compounded medications.
What's so dangerous about it?
So compounding, first of all, the molecule for semaglutide, which goes into Ozempic and Wegovy, and the molecule for tirzepatide, which goes into Zepbound or Mounjaro, have not been released to the public yet, right? So if you ask people from Novo Nordisk or from Eli Lilly or anyone from these top companies, they're like, we don't even know where they're getting the molecule, what they're using. They're also compounding it with the different inactives. And some could say the inactives they're compounding with B12 are harmless, but compounding pharmacies have much significantly less restriction and rules and regulations that we do with FDA approved medications. And so would I use a compounded pharmacy for a topical retinoid? I mean, to be honest, I'm not against it, but I myself like my FDA approved Taz that I use, or my tretinoin for my face as well. But you know, would I use a compounding maybe topical? Sure, that's a little less dangerous. But I want to inject into my subcutaneous tissue a non-FDA approved, a compounded version of a medication when the FDA approved versions are available. That's what's wild to me. Yes, there's a shortage, but you can still absolutely go on these medications. And for me, the wildest part is that if you have a BMI greater than 27, your insurance will pay for the medication for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so instead of spending $300, $400 a month on the bootleg version, you can get the actual FDA-approved version with a copay from your insurance if you medically qualify. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, even if you don't medically qualify and you're on the medication, you could still get the FDA-approved for around $500 if you use a coupon, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you're not even saving money. When people make the economic argument, I'm like, it's not even saving money. Mm-hmm. It's just that a lot of these med spas and places that are doing it, they're prescribing these compounded versions and they're not checking basic comprehensive metabolic panels on people to make sure that their liver function, kidney function is stable. They're not meeting with these patients. You know, in my practice, I've had, knock on wood, I've had zero patients with adverse events and zero patients who've had to discontinue the medication due to side effects, because we really are careful with regards to the dosing schedule, making sure that the patients have nutrition information, make sure patients know exactly what they're supposed to eat while they're on a GLP-1 to avoid side effects. Mm-hmm. We do everything with regards to educating them about strength training, how important it is to preserve muscle mass while you're on these medications. So no medication is without risks. Mm-hmm. This medication has a gazillion benefits, but it's still a medication that can be incredibly dangerous if used incorrectly for the person that doesn't really need it, or in a way that's not safe and effective. And so that's, unfortunately, it's like one of those things, like one rotten apple spoils the bunch, you know, because then you have all in the news saying that like Ozempic is killing all these people, but in reality,
stomach paralysis.
Exactly. But when used safely and when used appropriately, they're very safe and effective medications. Mm-hmm. And I've even used it in patients with a BMI lower than 27, because for anyone listening, you know, people of Southeast Asian descent, actually the BMI cutoff for cardiometabolic disease and for overweight and obesity is actually even lower than white individuals. You know, so there's a variety of reasons why some patients with PCOS, for example, may benefit from being on a GLP-1 if they can't lose weight. So there's a variety of reasons why we'll use this medication, but there's safe and effective ways to do it. And there's evidence-based ways to do it that provide safety. And then unfortunately, like with everything else, it becomes popular and people think of it as an over-the-counter, and it's very much not.
I feel like it's like getting Botox here.
And it's like so not getting.
And that happens with Botox too. Like you can go to any med spa, you can go to a dentist, you can go to, you know, depending what state you're in. I feel like there are places where they do it at like the hair salon. I mean, it's terrifying. Don't really know what you're getting injected
at the hair
either.
Salon, oh my God.
Yeah. I don't know where I saw that, but I was like, ooh, that's like,
my God.
Yeah. What about the long-term effects? Because I feel like that's another argument that people who are so anti these medications say, well, they haven't been studied that long.
Right.
You know, we don't know what the long-term implications are of these. What is your argument for that?
Right. Well, I'm super glad that before we got into this, I got to tell your listeners to look up my zero conflicts of interest with pharma, because I'm going to sound like a pharma shell, even though I'm not. I'm a total lifestyle advocate. But these medications are quite life-changing for many people. With regards to long-term effects, it's a very fair question. And one thing I always present with my patients is, here's the data we have, here's the data we don't have. And every decision to take a medication or to not take a medication is a risk versus benefit ratio. Mm-hmm. How much are you having this conversation about the risk versus benefit ratio at a med spa? Probably zero. So that's why it's really important for patients to have that essentially consent, to really have that, it's shared decision-making to make that decision. So with regards to when we're concerned about long-term effects, these class of medications, so GLP-1s actually have been out for a while. Even though we're hearing about them for weight loss, they're getting more popular. The first class of these medications was out all the way back in 2006. So almost 20 years ago, this class of medications has been out and has demonstrated significant and robust safety when used, of course, appropriately since 2006. With regards to the newer agents like semaglutide, so with Ozempic or Wegovy, Ozempic has been out since 2016. Mm-hmm. So we have a good amount of robust safety data on that. And then Mounjaro, obviously tirzepatide and Zepbound is a little more recent. And so it's everything we have to weigh on with regards to risks versus benefits. So for a patient who is planning to go on it and doesn't know what are the long-term side effects, we can only give them, well, this is how long the medication's been out. Here's how long the class of medications that's been out. And this is all the safety data we have, which shows it's a very safe and effective medication. This specific one you're choosing to go on, this one's been out for this many years. This is the safety data we have. But it would be absolutely absurd for me to, you know, say with full confidence, you know, it's going to be 100% safe. It's there's absolutely no issue long term, because the way it works is you release a medication, you have robust to go into FDA approval, has robust safety data. But the research doesn't stop there. It's not like the medication gets FDA approved and we say, all right, we're done. No, I mean, there's post-marketing surveillance, which is incredibly detailed and stringent, and they're following any uptick of any signal for any harm. And so it's one of those things that, you know, for my patients who go on these medications, it's so life-changing that the unknown potential risks are outweighed by the known potential benefits for them. Mm-hmm. But that risk benefit scenario could be different for each individual.
That's how I felt about all my beauty stuff.
Yeah.
My Botox.
I mean, I'm a huge
Until Botox did me dirty.
Oh my gosh. I'm a huge Botox fan.
I love how honest you are about it, but about the medications and the, you know, the safety and all of that, because I feel like there are definitely practitioners who are just kind of like blanket statement, like, yes, it's safe. And, you know, you're totally so meticulous when it comes to all of this.
Yes, exactly. And you really, I do think we have to just keep in mind that everything's a risk benefit ratio, right? So we have all these cardiovascular parameters that improve, right? So for someone that struggled with obesity for so long and is dealing with, they're on, you know, five medications for hypertension, for lipids, and they're struggling with their weight. You know, I have patients that are like world-renowned registered dietitians that know everything to know about what to eat. And it wasn't until they went on a GLP-1 that they could finally lose weight, because so much of obesity and weight management is genetically related, and it's complex and multifactorial, and we don't have all the answers yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those patients, for her, being able to lose, you know, 60 pounds and go off for hypertension medications, put her hyperlipidemia into remission, that is far outweighs. And also, I mean, also the fact that she lost 60 pounds and her joints hurt less and she feels like she can go running, you know, and has more energy. That far outweighs the potential of the unknown risks that aren't, we can't quite calculate. But, you know, I think that that's why it's a specific variable, a risk benefit equation for each person, which may be different depending on what someone's struggling with. But yes, the safety data for them currently looks great, but we can't say, you know, 10 years from now, will we find something different? We hope not, but we have to be transparent about that.
If you are looking for the absolute best, most comfortable intimates and basics, look no further than M. M is a hot new collection of craveable intimates from Made in Form, a brand with a whole lot of history. They've been around since the very first bras, and now they're bringing you a new kind of classic, the chicest basics you have ever seen. So Made in Form is a brand with 100 years of innovation and category leadership. They wrote the book on bras, and M is the next juicy chapter. So you guys really have to feel it to believe it. They have this yummy, buttery, soft fabric that feels way more expensive than it really is, and in great styles that won't break the bank. Honestly, all of their seamless bras are the most comfortable bras I've ever worn. And they also have on-trend designs made from stretchy, comfy fabrics in incredible colors. M can be worn as innerwear or outerwear. You can style it to your taste. Some of the bras are kind of like a cross between a bra and a tank or like a camisole, and you can wear them to work out. You can wear it as kind of a crop top. So many ways to style it, and you can create looks that serve for all or none to see. So for more delicious details, check out maidenform.com. That's maidenform.com. Maidenform.com. As you guys probably know, I have been going through some life changes and I've moved into a new temporary home, but I'm still doing everything I can to make it cozy and homey. And my one-stop shop to get so many things that I need is Article. Article has an amazing curated assortment of mid-century modern, coastal, industrial, Scandi, and boho designs, and it makes furniture shopping super simple. Their team of designers are all about finding the perfect balance between style, quality, and price, and they are dedicated to thoughtful craftsmanship that stands the test of time and looks good doing it. I got the Gabriola ivory boucle chairs last time I moved out of my home and moved into a new place. That was 2 years ago, and they still look amazing. They also have this gorgeous bench that I got for the end of my bed. They just have really amazing quality pieces, whether you are looking for furniture or decor. They also offer fast, affordable shipping across
across the US and Canada. Plus, they won't leave you waiting around. You pick the delivery time. They send you updates every step of the way. And Article's knowledgeable customer care team is there when you need them to make sure your experience is smooth and stress-free. So Article is offering my listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim, visit article.com/blonde, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/blonde for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Let's talk about some wellness trends.
Yeah.
What are some of the more egregious wellness trends that you can think of that are out there? I may have asked you this last time.
Oh,
but
my goodness.
Well, there's so many. I know.
There's so many.
It's okay if it's something I do.
No, I'm not sure. Even colonics?
No.
Oh, thank God. No. Okay. So colonics, I would say, are one of the craziest ones. You can literally puncture your colon.
Ugh,
and
God.
In reality, you just do not. No one needs a colonic.
Mm-hmm.
That one's frightening. I would say some supplements can be scary. I would say as a cardiologist, especially practicing in California, I always say when I started working here, because I did all my medical training, my med school residency fellowship in Philadelphia. And when I moved to LA to start practicing in 2020, I was like, you know what? They should have a course specifically called, so you're going to practice cardiology in California just to learn about supplements. Because the amount of times I see liver function tests abnormal from supplements is, I mean, hands down. Now it's like it's an immediate snap reaction. The second I see a patient, their LFTs went through the roof. I say, did you start a new supplement last month? Yes, I did. I started X, Y, or Z. We stopped the supplement. Their liver function improves. I see a patient with SVT, like a tachycardia. And suddenly I'll be like, okay, did you start a supplement last month? Yes. Okay, let's stop it. The tachycardia goes away.
And so, is that any supplement or is
there's a variety.
High doses?
This is the issue, is that there's a variety. So when it comes to supplements, like there are things that are quite benign. I take every day B12 because I'm vegan. I take vitamin D every day because also because I'm vegan and also I avoid the sun like the plague. and I take a multivitamin. So women of childbearing age, we're taking something with folic acid just in case. But the thing is that there are certain supplements that I didn't just list that are probably more benign. But truthfully, supplements in general are not regulated. There's no cohesive, stringent policy with regards to what even within the same batch is identical with regards to inactives and actives and things like that. So actually during our 2022, when we published our clinical practice statement on nutrition for cardiovascular disease for the American Society of Preventive Cardiology, that was something I really wanted to add in to our guidelines that had been left out of pretty much all guidelines before. So we actually did a supplement section and we wrote that there are actually no supplements that are proven to make you live longer, reduce cardiovascular disease risk. I mean, if you're an omnivore, you likely don't need B12. You can always get your B12 checked, but it's, you know, for vegans, it's something we need to take. But, you know, in reality, if you're deficient in something, like say if you're iron deficient, you know, I've seen patients, the scariest part is when you see patients that find out they're iron deficient and they see this natural healer person that's putting them on iron supplements. But, you know, we find out 5 years later, they go to see gastroenterology. It turns out they have colon cancer. You know, if you have a deficiency in something, we want to find out why, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're a young woman that's iron deficient, is it because you have heavy periods? Is there dysfunctional uterine bleeding? Because there's ways we can treat the underlying cause without just throwing supplements on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have herbals, which are an entire different ballpark and can be really dangerous. And I, as a cardiologist, find them to be the most egregious with regards to causing arrhythmia or with regards to causing interactions with other medications or liver injury. And so I just say at the best case scenario, it's expensive urine. Like your best case scenario is you're just peeing out a lot of money, which is fine. Worst case scenario, it causes liver dysfunction, can cause some cardiac arrhythmia, something like that. So, you know, it's just something to just be cognizant of, especially if someone's selling it to you.
Yes. I know. And I feel like that's another thing. And I take some supplements, but I think that, you know, there is this mistrust with pharmaceuticals, and I understand people don't want to be on a bunch of medications and some medications have side effects and then you need medications for that. But there is this like just kind of inherent trust with supplements when that's an industry.
Absolutely.
Too.
Like people don't even realize fish oil. Like so some of my patients think they're taking fish oil. This is beneficial. They don't realize fish oil can cause atrial fibrillation.
Really?
So if you can eat fish, eating fish is perfectly healthy. Eating salmon, amazing. Do it 2-3 times a week. Eat fish. Fish oil, you do not need. There's a very small percentage of specific patients who need fish oil. It's called the Reduce It trial. The criteria for people with type 2 diabetes, high triglycerides, etc. Other than that, fish oil has failed every single clinical trial. Actually, fish oil is my number one example of how pharma has actually tried to make supplements into an industry. Mm. Like pharma, but it's so rigorous. What has to be tested and claimed has to have show outcome benefits mm-hmm. that pharmaceutical companies have wasted millions upon millions of dollars with studying fish oil with every trial failing. And so wow. that's a perfect example. I mean, they tried to make it happen. It didn't happen. Uh-huh. And yeah, fish oil can cause atrial fibrillation, cause increased bleeding, all these things. You don't need fish oil. Eating fish is great, but you don't need fish oil. So mm-hmm. even ones that people think are benign can cause, you mm-hmm. know, numerous issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay, last question, yeah. but because we're talking about oil, even though it's kind of separate, but seed oils. Seed oh. oils are so hot right now.
Oh my gosh. I don't
What's
know
your hot
who,
take on that?
What billionaire
seed
is behind
oil has
the
bad
anti
PR.
Seed who yeah, who, what billionaire is behind the anti seed oil? I need to find out who is so seed oil, it makes me laugh so much because when you look at the actual data, I mean, literally every randomized controlled trial, like when you look at all the levels of evidence, things like canola oil and, you know, are just so many different kinds of seed oils can be so beneficial when it comes to lipid profile, diabetes risk, et cetera. Coconut oil is really not good. We recommend against it because it's high in saturated fat, really raise your ApoB or LDL cholesterol. And so seed oils are perfectly safe. They've gotten a bad rap. They're perfectly safe and they're perfectly fine to use. Do I think people should be drinking it, you know, every day? Of course not. But mm-hmm. I think they get a bad rap because of processed foods, things like that. Mm-hmm. Eating a hyper palatable processed food is different than using canola oil in your salad or, you know, eating olive oil or, you know, avocado oil is great too. Those are my three favorite go-tos.
Olive, avocado, and what else?
Avocado oil. So I think the best data we have is for olive oil and canola oil, for oh. sure, from a cardiovascular disease prevention standpoint, mm-hmm. hands down. Avocado oil hasn't been tested as much, but has a similar fatty acid ratio profile. So that one's pretty good too. Coconut oil, really not great. And not to say like you can never eat coconut oil. You know, mm-hmm. like I mentioned, no one food in one dose is going to cause disease. Right. So, but in general, it's one of the ones you want less cardiovascularly beneficial. But yeah, seed oils have just gotten a bad rap. And I think it's caught on and there's no one out there doing the pro seed oil PR besides mm-hmm. me, and no one pays
Simon
me from
Hill.
Any seed oil company.
Do you know Simon Hill?
Yeah, he is too.
He was on my podcast. He wasn't like pro, but yeah. he was like, it's not,
fine. No,
you know,
it's, yeah.
I think that I'm just imagining all the listeners right now, like shaking.
I know.
But because of the processing and, you know,
I know, and processing is a whole nother demon. I know, right? Yeah. Like, so everything we eat is processed in some way or form. And so processing is also like a very nuanced discussion. Kevin Hall, who is like probably the world's expert on processed foods. He's the director of nutrition research at NIH. He's a good friend of mine.
Ooh.
He is amazing.
You should have him on.
You should definitely have him on. And so when we think of like all the research he's done, when you think about hyper palatable processed foods, of course, we can eat more of those and eat lots of them. But some things that are incredibly healthful are also processed. So then there's also this like appeal to nature fallacy that also gets in the way. I'm a vegan and I like am thin and I don't tend to want to eat breakfast or eat a lot. So what do? I use protein powder every day. And for me, that's like a great way for me to get the exact kind of amount of protein I need. And thank goodness it exists and it's quote unquote processed. Is that any worse for me than eating lentils? Absolutely not, you know? Mm. So processing has kind of there's two ends of the sword there, but it's a bit confusing and nuanced. And You should have Kevin Hall on for a full discussion on that.
Amazing. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you for
Tell
having
everybody
me.
Where they can find you.
You can find me on Instagram at Danielle Bilardo, MD. That's where I'm mostly. I'm on Twitter or X now, I guess, too, but not as much. And yeah.
And you're doing telehealth.
I do
well,
telehealth,
right?
Yes. So I see patients in California, but I also see patients across the U.S. Amazing. Yeah. So if you have a high lipoprotein A.
I'm raising my hand. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you liked it, and if you like the show in general, please take a second to rate, review, and subscribe. It goes a long way, and it's actually the best way to support the show. Also, if you want to see more about each episode, you can head over to the Blonde Files podcast on Instagram. You can go to ariellaurie.com. And I'm always posting about each episode over on my personal page at ariellaurie.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.